Good afternoon, and welcome to the Eco-News Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson, director at Friends of the Eel River. The Eco-News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU, brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco-News. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. The two dams on the upper Mainstem Eel River, Cape Horn Dam and Scott Dam, divert water from the Eel to the Russian River watershed via Potter Valley at the top of the east branch of the Russian River. This year, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, has started the formal process to reissue or to withdraw the federal license under which PG&E is allowed to operate the two Eel River dams. For our part, Friends of the Eel River has been working for dam removal since our founding in 1977. We've touched on the issues around dam relicensing and dam removal in a series of previous broadcasts, including a couple in June with our colleague Darren Maru, Caltrout's North Coast Program Director. Our focus in those discussions was the state of California's imperiled fisheries, especially the salmon, steelhead, and trout here in the Eel River. If you want to find those shows in the archives, look for our June 21st and 29th and July 6th and 20th shows. Now, there are three easy ways to listen to old shows. You can go on khsu.org and search for Eco News. You can go to eelriver.org, go to the Resources tab and pull down to radio shows. Or you can subscribe to our podcast using whatever app you like. I use Downcast, but your mileage may vary. Today, we're going to talk some more about the overall shape of this relicensing or delicensing process, where we are now, what the key steps in the immediate future look like, and above all, why it matters. My guest today is David Keller. David's been a leading voice for river conservation in the North Bay Area for decades. He's served as Friends of the Eel River's Bay Area director for the last decade. Welcome to the Eco News Report, David.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you.
So let's start by why we at Friends of the Eel River are working to remove these Eel River dams. Why and how are they a problem for Eel River fisheries?
Well, these two dams block the headwaters of the Eel River, and the Scott Dam, which forms Lake Pillsbury, means that there's no fish passage above Scott Dam. It's too high to be able to, for the fish to be able to swim over the top. And so as a result, we have this wonderful habitat at the headwaters, which is fed through most of the year by snow melt as well as rainfall. And the fish can't get there. And it means that a good deal of spawning and rearing habitat as well as cold, clean water are not accessible to the rest of the Eel River and her wonderful amphibians, fish, and wildlife. So after 100 years of being at the headwaters of the Eel River, it's time to take them down and allow fish passage and restoration of fish habitat and the wealth that comes with that above the dams.
So, okay, the Eel River dams impose a cost on Eel River fisheries in terms of their productivity by blocking off that, what is it, a tenth of the total watershed at the top. And yeah, maybe that's some of the best habitat, but they create benefits, right? The dams produce a bunch of electric power that people use, and that power makes money for the utility. It's at least important to PG&E as a source of revenue, right?
Well, one would think, at least theoretically, that that's true. However, the project, the Paddle Valley project, only produces a maximum of 9.2 megawatts, and that's when everything's running at full tilt, when everything is functioning and at high water flows. 9.2 megawatts of power fed into PG&E's power grid could be replaced with 5 acres of solar. It could be replaced with windmills. It could be replaced by conservation and efficiencies, much as PG&E has done throughout the rest of the state in not having to build any new generation plants for the past 15, 20 years because they have found the oasis, which is power savings. So 9.2 megawatts, not very much power. The project is probably a money loser for PG&E. They tried to sell it in 1996 or in 1998 as an uneconomic project. And we're happy to have it taken off of their hands and taken down and see it return to the full productivity that the Eel River needs.
So if the dams don't even produce enough power to pay back the cost of maintaining them, and they are 100-year-old dams, what's the point? Are they just there to divert Eel River water to the Russian? And who benefits?
Well, this is the West, And water is power, water is money, and the fact that a huge amount of water gets transferred to the East Branch Russian River from there into Lake Mendocino means that the residents, businesses, property owners, and cities within the Russian River watershed have all benefited for 100 years with free water. The Russian River is overappropriated during the dry season, and that overappropriation, meaning more water is taken out than would be naturally available within the watershed, that overappropriation is masked by the inflow of water coming in from the Eel River. So the Eel River is being used as an extra water source for the millions, nay, billions of dollars worth of wealth that has been created in the past 100 years in the Russian River watershed.
So what about FERC? Let's get back to that agency. Who are they and why are they involved in this process?
Well, the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is responsible for licensing power projects, in this case, a hydro project. And it's their job to make sure that they operate safely, productively, and meet all the standards for licensing under federal law. And in this case, the license to operate is a 50-year license. So they were last licensed starting in 1972, before that when the Scott Dam was completed in 1922. So this would be the third time that the cycle of licensing and relicensing has come up, and theoretically would be another 50 years of license to operate for PG&E or their successors as a hydropower generation project.
That seems like a long time, but do we have a really clear idea of how long this relicensing process is going to take?
Well, my understanding is that theoretically it's supposed to be completed by 2022, which is when the current license expires. But it is very clear, both in experience and from what PG&E and FERC staff are telling us, it's a 10, 15, maybe even a 20-year process to get everything done, signed, sealed, and the license on paper. Until that time, the dams and PG&E's operations continue under the existing license.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that existing license. You know, the bottom line for us is, did FERC really provide adequate protection for Eel River fisheries in the last license? And, you know, how did the current requirements for Eel River flows get set?
Well, let's go back a little bit further than that.
Okay.
The Eel River was the most productive salmon-bearing river on California's coast, except for the Klamath, which is in two states, was the most productive salmon-bearing river in the coastal region of California of any of the rivers. Cannery records showing that the turn of the century, 1900 or so, was yielding upwards of a million fish per year. And that's just cannery records. That number dwindled by the 1920s. The Eel River was taken off the list of fishable rivers for commercial purposes because the salmon numbers had dropped precipitously. And since then, the numbers have dropped even further. When we look at what's involved in relicensing, one of the things that's changed since the last time is we're at a point where three species have been listed under federal and state law as being endangered and threatened, and those numbers continue to go down. And since the last licensing in 1972, the federal government has stepped in along with the state government and said, nope, we have to do things to prevent the extinction of these three species. That's coho, chinook, and steelhead. And so there was a revision to the 1972 license to begin to account for that, and a lot of information, data, and science has improved since those times, and certainly since 1972 and since the revisions in 2002-2003. We know a lot more about what works and what doesn't work, and we still find there's a lot that isn't working. That's what has to be taken.
Just to sum that up, in the last license, FERC really continued operations that contributed, at least, to the pressures that were driving Eel River salmon and steelhead extinct. And so they had to change those rules to create the system we're operating under now, which has made things a bit better, but still, in our view, is contributing to those pressures, still leaves the upper river blocked off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as a result, we don't see a path for recovery of these three species as long as this project and the diversions and the dams are in place.
So, if you're just tuning in, I'm Scott Greeson with Friends of the Eel River, and I'm talking to David Keller, also with Friends of the Eel River, and we're talking about Eel River dams and the relicensing process that's now underway. And David, back to the present, FERC opened this process this spring, and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, I guess to, you know, it's not an agency that has a great reputation for environmental concern.
They are not an environmental agency. They are there to serve the power industry nationally, in this case, specifically the hydropower industry.
And as the agency framed the analysis of this license, from our perspective, they got it badly wrong on a bunch of fronts. And maybe you can help us work through a few of these just to understand how help our listeners understand how badly FERC seems to misunderstand the situation we confront for Eel River fisheries today. So decommissioning, what did FERC say about the idea of decommissioning the dams?
Well, the idea of taking them down, reducing their size, ending diversions, creating a full flow through the Eel River without dams was not even on their map. FERC and PG&E both denied that decommissioning, that is, the physical removal and the removal of Lake Pillsbury and the end of the water diversions, was not on their program at all in this relicensing period. So certainly our interest, fisheries' interest, through a number of conservation organizations, as well as tribal interests, have said, wait a second, we don't see a path to restoration of the fisheries and preservation of water interests in the Eel River without consideration of decommissioning. And fortunately, after a number of protests and comments received by FERC during this first initial process, FERC at least has put decommissioning back on the table to be considered when they do their environmental review for the relicensing. PG&E is still saying, nah, we're not going to consider it, but if FERC decides to include it in the environmental review as an option, it will have to be considered. And we, of course, will be yielding whatever pressure we can to make sure that those studies and potential objectives are looked at thoroughly during the environmental review.
Okay, another big issue from our perspective is the question of dam safety. And anybody who's been paying attention to the news in California knows about the near collapse of the Oroville Dam when its emergency spillway nearly gave way after its main spillway did give way. How has FERC approached the question of dam safety in this relicensing for the Eel River dams?
Well, it's been problematic all the way through. Since 9/11, all issues, and this is nationally, about dam safety, about project safety, have been taken off the table for public review and consideration and peer consideration and reviews and evaluations. It is now, all the information about dam safety is classified as CEII, Critical Energy Infrastructure Information, and PG&E has the right legally to keep as much of it as they wish to be completely private and confidential. In fact, if you want to look at any of it, if you're a downstream resident and want to know what would happen if the dam were to break and would my property be flooded, you have to sign a confidentiality agreement to get that information, and you can't discuss any of that information in public. We want that changed. We want to know what is the condition of this dam that is currently 95 years old, that's for Scott Dam, or for the smaller diversion dam, Cape Horn Dam, which was built in 1908. What are the actual physical and structural conditions of these dams? What is happening to the underlying geology? We know that there were problems during the construction of Scott Dam in 1921-22, where a slope that they were going to connect to on the north bank was moved and slid, and they, if anybody's familiar with the dam, you know that it doesn't go straight across the river. There's an angle at the north end, and that angle was intended to avoid a very large and ancient landslide. That land continues to creep. We don't know what PG&E's assessment of that is. We don't know what pressure that puts on the rest of the dam. We don't know what that means in terms of longevity for another 50 years of this structure. We want that all to be public. Of course, all of that within the consideration is there any way to make this dam capable of having fish passage? Nobody with any experience in fisheries believes that's possible, but all of this folds into a question that at this point FERC and PG kept off the table.
Okay, but when we said to FERC, we need to look at dam safety as an issue in relicensing, they said, with respect to dam safety, the only thing the agency is going to consider is whether any changes to the dam might make it less safe.
Right.
They're not going to look at whether the dam itself, as it now exists, is inherently safe, whether it has perhaps suffered structural changes in the last 9 decades that might make it less safe than it was. And FERC has pointed to both its own dam safety processes and the state of California's division of the safety of dams and said those reviews and inspections are more than adequate because they happen every year and they do a big review every 5 years, and so that should be plenty. Why isn't it?
That's the same process that they used to tell everybody that Oroville Dam was just fine. And we're saying, no, that information needs to be public so that engineers who are experienced in dam safety and geotechnology, who are not in the employ of FERC, who are not consultants to PG&E, can tell us independently whether or not these dams are safe and secure for the next 50 years. And that's what we want. And FERC is going to have to figure out how many more embarrassments, how many more potential tragedies, how many potential real tragedies might happen before they change their tune about what is available to the public to be able to review on dam safety, on stability. And one of the paradoxical things about this is that the water diversions, the people who are benefiting, the agencies that are benefiting from the water diversions on the Russian Riverside, all speak of reliability of water supply. They want to be able to predict with some reliability and some consistency what their water supply will be. And yet, they're not pressing for the core piece of reliability, which is this dam reliable as a storage mechanism to ensure year-round water supply? Is this dam safe, stable, reliable? And in our minds, you can't even talk about reliability of water on the Russian Riverside without talking about the stability and safety of these dams. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. PG&E is talking about trying to figure out some way of getting some of their information out to the public. As yet, FERC continues to say, no, we have a specific division who considers dam safety as part of FERC, and no, the public is not invited. So we'll have to see how this hashes out. It's a critical issue. You can't say this structure is safe and we'll take your word for it for the next 50 years. We can't say this dam is reliable and the water supply and power generation that depends on that stability is going to be reliable for the next 50 years without being able to see the details. So continued pressure on FERC, on PG&E, on the State Division of Safety Dams is all going to be critical.
Okay, let's talk a little about what comes next in the relicensing process. But first, I need to tell people who are just tuning in, this is the EcoNews Report. I'm Scott Greeson with Friends of the Eel River, talking with David Keller, also with Friends of the Eel River from the Bay Area. We're talking about the relicensing process that is now happening for the two dams on the Upper Eel River. David, you and I are going to be going back and forth with PG&E and with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission about study plans and studies for the next few years at least. What's actually at issue here? What new information do we really need and why?
Well, in order to do the environmental review on whatever relicensing proposals come up, FERC and PG&E, but FERC and the public really need new current information. There are data gaps from the existing information, from the existing research that are in 2017 and the next few years going to be critical to fill and find out what the actual science is showing us, what the actual engineering is showing us, what the actual fish biology is showing us from what we know now, not from what we knew 50 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
So we've already talked a little bit about fish passage and dam safety as two of the critical issues. We've talked about the habitat in the upper basin. A couple of the other issues we're asking PG&E to look at more closely and, you know, not getting a whole lot of traction with are mercury contamination and climate change. Why isn't FERC interested in looking at those questions, and why do they matter?
And our job is to really make it impossible for them to avoid that. Mercury, for instance, when exposed to, which is a natural component in the rocks underlying the upper watershed, as is true in much of California, when that is exposed to oxygen, becomes methylated, and that becomes biologically capable of being taken into tissue of animals and fish, and so that with an operation of a thing like a reservoir where the sediments are continually exposed to air, the mercury becomes methylated, gets uptake in the fish tissue, and I think, Scott, you said that the highest tissue burden of mercury anywhere in the state was shown in lamprey?
No, it was in a smallmouth bass that was caught in the Lake Pillsbury Reservoir during the swamp sampling program that happened, I think, in 2006. It was the early 2000s. So it's a relatively recent sample, and it was, in fact, the highest concentration that was found in the state in that program. So it does suggest that there's at least the potential for high levels of methylated mercury to cause problems for people who eat fish, but also for animals which eat other animals who may have, you know, been in contact with the lake water or its sediments.
Yep, and mercury is a cumulative toxin, and especially dangerous for pregnant women, for fetuses, and for young children.
Yeah, it's a big problem for development, basically.
Yep. About that, it's going to be really important. Does that affect the fish in Lake Pillsbury and upstream, as well as fisheries downstream, and then the prey animals who are feeding on the fish? So that's one area of study that needs to be, shall we say, fleshed out.
So, David, we from the other side, which is to say the Potter Valley, Russian River, Sonoma County side of this question, we hear very strong claims about the importance, indeed the necessity, of maintaining the diversions of Eel River water to Potter Valley and the Upper Russian River. Some actually say that as many as 600,000 people are dependent on the diversion of Eel River water into the Russian River. But you have a line at the bottom of your emails where you ask essentially, how can the Russian be managed without any Eel River inputs? Is that the only way out? How do we get to solutions here?
Well, and I think really, you know, in order to fix the EO, we have to look at how do you fix the Russian, or should I say take them off their fix of free water from the Eel River. Mm. How do you demonstrate for beneficiaries of water on the Russian River side that they, in fact, can thrive economically, socially, and have viable communities and agriculture and continued development of their wealth without depending on the Eel River water? And a lot of that is on additional conservation and efficiencies. There's also almost 40,000 acre feet of water that has disappeared in the Russian River side into illegal and unpermitted water diversions, i.e. water stolen from the Russian River without legal permits to do so. And we'd like to see those eliminated before the Russian River communities and municipalities and counties say, no, we need more Eel River water. We need to continue these diversions. There is a limit to what the watersheds can produce, and living within those limits is the way to the future. Otherwise, you're depending on unreliable sources, and that ultimately will fail. So the Russian River watersheds are going to have to figure out, and we're happy to help, in how to get water storage off of their own watershed, particularly true in the Potter Valley Irrigation District, and how downstream mainstem Russian River users can actually live within the limits of what the Russian River can reliably produce. As far as the 600,000 people who depend on the Eel River, that's nonsense. All of Sonoma County Water Agency's stored water for their 600,000 customers in the cities of Sonoma County and into Marin County, they depend on Lake Sonoma, which is three times as large as Lake Mendocino, and that is filled on its own watershed, completely independent of the Eel River. So the actual beneficiaries of Eel River water are above Dry Creek, which is near Guerneville, west of Santa Rosa, and upstream. And that's the target area of the Russian River watershed that needs to be addressed.
Okay, we've run out of time for the show today, but we're definitely going to be back with more about Eel River Dam removal. Thanks so much for being on today, David, and I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you.
We also have an announcement today from Friends of the Eel River. We are expanding our capacity by growing our team. I have become the conservation director. I'm going to focus on program work. And I'd like to introduce you to our new executive director, Stephanie Tidwell. Hi, Steph.
Hello, everyone.
Stephanie worked in our bioregion for 9 years as the executive director of the Klamasiski Wildland Center, where we regularly partnered when I was leading EPIC. Most recently, Steph was the development director for Amazon Watch based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. We are really pleased to have her back in the region. So welcome.
Thank you, Scott. It's truly an honor to be working with the Friends of the Eel River team and the North Coast communities at such a pivotal time for the Eel River and native fish recovery. I'm excited to get to work.
Cool. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you soon. Okay, this has been the Eco News Report. My name's Scott Greeson. I've been your host for the past half hour. I've been speaking with David Keller and Stephanie Tidwell from Friends of the Eel River. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again on the archive programs page of the station's website at khsu.org. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Tune in again next week, the same time, for the Eco News Report.